Okay. Cool. Yeah, so I feel pretty ready to just
Okay.
start recording. How are you? Are you? Is there anything you feel like you need to do?
No, I think I'm good. I think I'm good. What if
Okay.
I need a bio break later or something? I'm good, I think.
Yeah, you can just say you need a break.
Okay.
So how do you like introduce yourself when you're like meeting new people?
Yeah,
I
I mean,
know we're coming out of a pandemic and meeting new people is.
I guess it depends on if like it's a professional setting or not. I would just, do you want me to introduce myself? Is
Yeah,
that
sure.
okay? All right, I guess I'll introduce myself. My name is Yetz, and I live in Las Vegas. I travel a lot, and I work in the video game industry.
Great.
Yeah. And I used to work in the film animation industry, but now I've switched over to games.
What was that like change like for you? Because I guess I don't know how,
How it's different. Yeah.
yeah, and like I think just like work-wise, people tend to get like specialized into doing specific things, and
Yeah.
sometimes like it's easier to just continue going down that track and like going to a different route and then changing even to a different industry is like, I feel like a lot of people experience a lot of resistance.
Yeah, so it was pretty easy for me, and also the video game industry and the animation movie industry are pretty close. I went to school for animation, and I actually worked with the co-founders of my current studio before. Back like 10 years ago, I worked with them as a entry level artist. So and now they're opening their second studio, so like in 2019, end of 2019, they called me up and asked if I wanted to join them. Yeah, and then so they hired me for my art fundamentals. I guess like in school I was more of a generalist, so we touched on a little bit of everything, and that's what they really valued. As a small studio, they wanted people who can wear multiple hats, kind of fill in where something is needed. Yeah. And I guess I'm also used to jumping around a lot for work because of animation. It's usually movie based, so project based. There will be like crunch time and the lulls, and then so I was able to travel a lot in between. Which was awesome. But now I have like a normal consistent work, so I
Yeah.
don't get to take 2 months off at a time to go travel.
Yeah.
So I just work somewhere else instead, since I'm fully remote.
Oh, no, yeah, I forgot that you're fully remote. Yeah.
Yeah, so I can live anywhere and work from anywhere,
Yeah.
as long as I work PST hours, so Pacific Coast hours. My job is based in the Bay Area. So I as long as I can meet the core hours, I can just live anywhere.
Gotcha. You are, I think, being maybe humble. I think you've worked some really like recognizable movies and like IPs.
You
Can you
want me
tell me?
to?
Yeah.
Sure.
Because I
So
don't even know all of them. I know like a few of them, but I don't
okay.
know
I
your
can go
body.
over some of the projects I worked on. I went to Ringling College of Art and Design, and it's a pretty well-known school for 3D animation, and they have a lot of good connections with the industry. So since then, I've worked at Sony Imageworks. I had an internship at Pixar, and that's kind of what jump-started everything. They chose me to be a lighting artist. So since then, I've been working as a lighting artist in film. So Sony, Disney, and then there's a lot of like traveling in between.
Yeah.
And after that, I worked at Lightstorm Entertainment, which is James Cameron's studio. So I worked on the latest Avatar. Yeah, at Disney, I worked on Zootopia, Moana, Big Hero 6. And at Sony, I worked on Hotel Transylvania, the first one, Arthur Christmas, and the Smurfs movie. I think that's it. I think that's it. Yeah. Oh, also, I worked at a smaller studio called Moonbot, which made a Oscar-winning short. I forget what year. 2010? Yeah. 2010, 2011. Mm-hmm. They won the Oscar for More is Less More, which is the short we worked on. But I was only there for a summer. And then, so it went Pixar, Moonbot, Sony. Oh, and then I went to San Francisco to work for the game studio PopCap San Francisco, mm-hmm. Which is a studio funded by my current co-founders at, you know, the studio I'm working at right now. And yeah, and then after that, I went to Disney when traveling for like almost 2 years, year and a half to 2 years, and then came back to work on Avatar. And then the current studio called me, so I've been there since.
Did you, when you were in college, like, were you aware that like your stuff would just be like project based? And
no, and that's really different, right? Like, I think it's really different from what most people are used to.
Yeah,
most people expect to come out of school or just enter a job and then be there full time. Maybe like,
yeah, I mean, that's the immigrant parent dream, that your child like graduates and if they can't get a prestigious job, at least a job that's steady and consistent.
Yeah, yeah. And I think like I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't sure what it'd be like, but jumping into art and animation kind of already alleviated me from that concern. You know, it was really stressful when I was about to go to college and I wanted to do animation. I knew I wanted to do art and animation, but my Chinese parents, you know, they were like, no, become an engineer first and then you can go study computer science and then you can work art into it, you know. expected from Chinese parents, Asian parents, maybe.
Yeah,
so I think that big leap was already, it was that moment where I decided, you know what, I have to follow my passion and regardless of what outcome may come, right? Like, this is something I feel strongly about. And if I'm this passionate about it, I must have success in it somehow, right?
Yeah.
Versus be mediocre in another industry just because you lack the motivation and interest really in what you're doing.
Yeah. And it's hard when you like are in an industry that you don't particularly care about, but it's your like job. And so like when things aren't too bad, it's like fine, you can get through the day. But like every job, every industry has their periods of being stressful, whether it's regular or irregular. And like when you're supposed to dig deep to get through those and you don't particularly care, and it's like you just know you're not playing to your strengths, it is so difficult and awful.
I just remember I actually started out studying computer science, you know, because I was like, okay, fine, I'll just do that. Yeah. So I did a year of computer science, and I just remember being in the intro coding class and not caring about the project at all, right? Not motivated to do the work. And then we were in a group project and like, I just, you know, there was just a huge lack of interest and I was just kind of coasting.
Yeah.
And then I feel like that's one of the moments where I was like, you know, if you just coast through life, you're just going to be mediocre the rest of your whole life. And probably just, you know, you won't find success. So money is, you're probably not going to make a ton of money just because you're okay at what you do, you know?
Yeah, you're always going to be playing to like not quite your strength. Like you're always going to be playing with your offhand. Yeah.
Right. And there was a moment where I was like, I feel very passionate about art. I'm good at art. You know, I've been drawing since I was young and like I loved animation films and I knew that the path I wanted to take, but I could see myself veering off in this other direction, you know. And I was thinking, well, 10 years from now, or like later on when I'm older, when I'm unhappy, I have nobody to blame but myself, right? Because the path is there, I can take it, but I'm choosing to go this other way just because other people think that's the way I should go.
Yeah.
And that's the way society, it's the norm, right? Like the safer bet. So I was like, no, I got to go see what's over here and follow what really draws my interest.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's how I live my life too. That was a big moment in my life, choosing that career path.
Yeah. I've known you for like probably like over 10 years now. And
wow.
And I think when I met you, you were like, I think you had started working at one of the animation studios already, and I think you might have like already traveled or just started to travel.
Oh,
but it was like pretty like relatively early on, and like my recollection and just like experience of like your overall demeanor and everything is like my perception and like what internally might have been going on might have been different, but like I always experienced you as like feeling like career-wise in a pretty good spot. Like when you were not working, it was like by choice.
Right, yeah.
I never like interacted with you and you're like, oh man, I've been applying to jobs and projects and like just nothing's coming. And it was either like, oh, like I'm just like starting this project or we're working on this project and really like deep into it or push time or crunch time, or I'm about to go on like this 2 month trip to, you know, wherever. Like where did it start feeling like comfortable for you? Like, oh, like I'm no longer like, I don't have to be a starving animation artist. Like, do you know what I mean?
Sure. Well, so there's a lot of money in animation. Maybe that helps. So I was never worried because there's constant work. There's a constant demand for animation. And it's pretty typical for artists to go from Disney for one season to go to Sony for another season. Like shows line up, right? So like when you are done here, you go somewhere else. Or now you have this network of people that you've worked with. If I know an artist and we're in need of somebody, then I'll call them up, you know, recommend that person. So there's constant work and there's good pay and a lot of overtime pay. So sometimes I end up in situations where I'm working overtime, but not able to spend my money, right? So I'm saving a lot. I feel like in animation, as like I took 2 months off out of the year and I made enough money to cover, you know, like more than enough money to cover the whole year. So like salary wise, it's good income. It was just more like the ups and downs of like being really busy and then, you know, not really have a good work-life balance. Sometimes.
Yeah, it's very like huge push or nothing and there's not much middle.
Right. And then I think also too, this goes back into what I said about if you're passionate about something, you will find success. I feel like talent is hard to find. And if you have skills or talent, then you will be valued. So opportunities will always come. Money will follow.
Yeah.
So I've never been worried about money. Plus, one time I got a fortune cookie that said, you'll never have to worry about steady income. So
you don't have a steady income until now.
No, I do. I've always had steady income. But if the fortune cookie says so, I don't have to worry about it.
I think like you're probably good at your job. Like, I don't know. I guess I feel wonder like, are there animators who just like are kind of mediocre and how much they struggle?
Sure. Like, it's a hard industry.
Yeah. Cause like you, I don't want to say like the college that you went to, you know, is the only reason because like,
yeah,
but like it helps having a recognizable name on your resume and stuff. And I think you mentioned the Pixar internship.
Yeah,
it's, and that's... from my world of like when I was an accounting major, like in our world, going to a well-known business school would get you, would open a lot of doors for you. If you intern at one of the big four accounting firms, you know, probably somewhat similar to your, the equivalent of your like big animation studios, Pixar, Disney, whatever other ones there are, like people would just like, oh, like, wow, this person must be like talented or worth having on our team.
Yeah, I think Ringling definitely was a large part of it, just because it gave me the exposure to these studios. Because like my, I would say my first, maybe my first three or four jobs were all because of my interviews I had at Ringling. So like senior year, you have a portfolio, kind of a portfolio class. And then like as a senior in the spring, all these studios will come and look at portfolios and talk to people they're interested in. So I had that exposure and contact, right? Like I had the recruiter from Sony, I had the recruiter from Disney, and like, so later on I can follow up and be like, hey, I'm done with this thing. Are you guys looking? And just connect that way. I would say animation is a hard industry to get into, and art in general. I think like the typical perception is art, you know, starving artists, you can't find a job. Yeah. Like, why do you want to get into that? But really, if you have the right opportunities and talent and skills, you can always succeed in anything. Animation, it is difficult. I would say you have to be prepared to work really hard for your passion, right? And then be willing to learn from other talented students, and also from the teachers and the environment, and be humble too, right? Because you're not going to be the best artist, which maybe a lot of people are used to. Like, I'm the most artistic in high school or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And honestly, money is also a big problem. Like Ringling, I think my graduating class started out with maybe 50 people. And then
Ringling?
Yeah. It's a small school.
Holy cow, that's so small.
I don't know about now, but when I was there in I graduated 2010. So when I was there, it was like, I think my class was, I don't know, I started out with 50, just my senior year. Freshman year, right? And then people would drop off because like, oh, I can't pay tuition, or the school had really strict, what are they called? Just, you know, if you...
Like grade requirements or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like project requirements, more or less. Like you have to pass these things. If you don't, you have to like stay back a year, or, you know, like your senior thesis, the concept stage has to be approved by the faculty. If it doesn't, you have to come back next year with new ideas. And then like you have to show a certain amount of progress as you're going through senior year. If you're not going to succeed, right? Or like if you can't hit those goals, then they'll probably fail you and you have to do it again next year.
This almost sounds like, I was watching a TikTok of somebody explaining like the process to complete their thesis. Or like their PhD.
Yeah.
And there were like, basically somebody had said like, oh, like getting your PhD is easy. Nobody ever fails it. And nobody ever fails their PhD defense. And the person who made the TikTok was explaining like, no, like the PI's the principal investigator, who's like basically your thesis advisor, like their reputation is on stake too. When you defend your thesis. So right. They're not going to let you even go up to take a take a chance at it.
Yeah.
If they think you're going to fail, because if you fail, it makes them look bad. And so like they are going to hold you back until they know that you're ready.
Right.
And that's when you get to go, and like you're going to be either stalled, or you're just going to like not get weeded out some other way.
Right. Yeah. I would say it's similar, very similar. Ringling has a reputation, and like a lot of the companies like to come to the school because it's a very professional environment. and they know the caliber of students that graduate from there, you know, like, if anything, the discipline of the students to take direction and to learn on the job. And
this is so interesting to
me. Okay, so I think I started out with 50 people, and I think the graduating group was like 20. So
this is almost like it sounds like you're almost doing a PhD program.
It's an undergrad, actually.
I know, but like it's like you're doing.
It's
like
very intense.
You have to, in order to graduate, you have to meet these benchmarks. It has to be cleared. Like you don't just do your PhD in a vacuum. Like your principal investigator is deeply involved in what you're doing, not just to like provide you advice, but to like really. Right. Like they're not going to let you continue forward if they don't think you're ready, or if they think your research is like doesn't make sense or something. And it sounds like you have to like have like a tangible thing that's done.
And then sometimes senior year, sometimes you'll have a visiting artist from Pixar or like whoever is coming here for portfolio review. They may sit in on your critique, and that's really intimidating, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely a great environment to learn what it is like to work in a professional environment, in like a studio environment, you know, like how do you take feedback, how do you give feedback, and how do you handle bad feedback, not bad, but just like when you get bad news where you're like, oh shoot, I have a lot.
Yeah, like what, how do you handle not effusive praise for your work?
Yeah. So a lot of that stuff, how do you communicate with your superior, your teacher, right? Or like your peers, or how do you get help from your peers or help each other?
Yeah. So like in the past, I've done some writing. I've like, my output has greatly diminished in the last few years, but it used to be like a lot more active and like the Twin Cities, like writing circles.
Oh, cool.
For my like personal writing journey, like getting feedback was at one point just like super stressful and like intimidating and like scary and like gave me so much anxiety. and like we talked about, you might have been like a really good artist or the best artist in your high school, but now you're in a whole school of people who are probably the best artists in their high school, right? Like what, for me, I called it eating like humble pie. Like what did that look like for you? What was your experience with that?
There were definitely days with a lot of tears. not just me, right? Sometimes I'll see like people in the bathroom kind of crying because, you know, something happened with their project or like they had a bad critique or not to, you know, give this picture of like a horrific experience, but it is like what you're saying, it's definitely a piece of humble pie, and you realize there's a lot of areas where you can grow. But I guess it's also character building, right? It's not about being the best and you'll find success, but finding out that you do have areas of weakness and great, how do you overcome that, or how do you take it as a person? You know, do you let that crush you? Do you have the composure to, okay, cool, well, that was not bad news, but I have to keep going and make the situation better, you know? A very valuable part of school for me was that, to just be able to like take different situations and adapt to it and grow from there and not be hard on yourself, you know? And that's easy to do, to always be like, oh man, I'm not as good. Or like, oh, I suck, you know? And I think every artist and every creative person runs into that situation.
Yeah.
So you can really negative talk yourself into just quitting whatever you're excited about. But a lot of the skill or a lot of the tricks of the trade, I guess, is to take those negative situations and grow from them.
Do you remember like your first critique?
We've always had a lot, so there's no first critique.
Gotcha.
But I did fail my first idea. So like junior year, you pitch two ideas for your thesis film. So we make a film at the end. And you have to pass one idea to move forward.
Like as an individual, you make a film or as a,
Yeah, as an individual. So during my time, it was more typical to make individual films, but more recently, people have grouped up to make group projects, which is really smart because, you know, maybe I'm interested in concept art, somebody else is interested in
it. And then it reflects like an actual work environment better
than
you being responsible for everything.
Right. So like me having to do everything meant I had to do everything well.
Yeah.
Versus if you're in a group project, you can like lean on to someone else who has a different interest, area of interest than you, and they can take care of that and you can focus on what you really want to show off, you know? So that's kind of, that's really cool. And that's what it's like in the business too, right? Professionally, you don't have to do everything, typically.
Yeah.
So, so I had to do an individual film. And I failed my first idea. And
do you remember your two ideas?
I don't remember the first one. I forget what the first one was.
I know this was a while ago.
Yeah, but I remember.
We're getting up there in years.
I remember going back to my dorm and just like feeling crushed, you know? Now I think of it, it's like, well, that was just one idea. What's the big deal, right?
Yeah.
You came up with the second one and you can always come up with more. But at that moment, it's just like that sense of rejection, you know, because the whole faculty, the board of faculty basically said, nope, this is not good enough. And I just remember sitting in my dorm room like, oh man, what do I do now?
Yeah. That makes me so sad. Like I've experienced you as just like a really happy and cheerful person. And
there have definitely been stressful times, even at work, you know, like where I remember when I first started at Sony, which is the first major studio I worked at, I started and I realized I didn't know anything, you know? Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
And my supervisor was kind enough to sit down with me and really walk me through the different, you know, processes. But yeah, it's like you learn so much in school, but then you really have to, but not everything applies once you start working, right? And I think that's true in any field where you do a lot of your learning on the job.
Yeah.
That's specific to your role. Yeah, I think I feel like I've always been really hard on myself. Maybe that's also the Asian in me where you have to succeed, you know, you have to be excellent, but then perfection can lead to, I don't know, very discouraging moments. I've definitely had hard times, really stressful times at work where either I feel like I'm not performing well or I'm not doing as well as other people, like my peers, right? Like, oh, they're pumping out so many shots, I've only done one this week or whatever. So that also happens. Yeah, nothing's easy. I think you just learn as you go, right? Things get easier as you get more experienced. But yeah, definitely had hard times in the beginning.
Like the adjustment from college to like real life is really difficult for a lot of people. And I almost feel like the better student you were, the harder that adjustment is.
Yeah.
Because like school is so like well-defined and rigid and like predictable, but like the workplace is so like different and chaotic.
Yeah, it again goes back to how adaptable you are, right? Yeah. And like, and that also relates to how well can you take bad news or good news, like grow from whatever situation is thrown at you.
Like having been in the writing community and seeing some like people who have been more, both more experienced and like published some books and, you know, further along in their writing career, and seeing some people who are like relatively early in their writing career, like you have to strike a right balance on like being hard on yourself or like setting expectations for yourself. Mm-hmm. But also like at least somewhat retainable or reachable ones. And like the artists who like are able to stick around, who are able to like really start a career, like they also have like a fairly healthy like inner monologue for themselves, where like they can experience like rejections from from, you know, a publisher for a manuscript or they're writing, or get feedback from, you know, a teacher, an editor or whatever, and still like, you know, find ways to move forward. Mm-hmm. And like you say, like take that humble pie or take that feedback or like, yeah, like my dialogue isn't very good or I can see that. I feel like when I was growing up, I didn't necessarily have like the healthiest inner dialogue. It was either just like do well in school or like you figure out a way to do well in school, you know?
Yeah.
And then like what ended up happening was a lot of my like self-worth and self-esteem were tied to like my grades.
I think, yeah, that's very Chinese, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe Asian in general. Yeah, like definitely that A+ student mentality, right? Yeah. If you don't get that A+, then what are you even doing?
Yeah.
A minus is not good enough.
Yeah.
Even though A- minus is great, right? You already are doing fine.
Yeah. And having this like healthier inner dialogue was something that for me that like, took a really, really long time to like develop and grow. And I feel like I can recognize that in you. I guess I wonder, like, when you're talking with people, do you ever just like notice that, like, oh, like this person does not treat themselves very well? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Because I can recognize it in myself, and I still do it.
Yeah,
with climbing. With rock climbing, I do it. With art, I do it. You know, it's and sometimes it can be very it can make things worse, a lot worse, just because of this negative talk you're having for yourself, right? And the situation may have been okay, but like now you're just making it a lot worse than it really is. So yeah, and then so I recognize it in other people as well.
Yeah, I recognize it in you because I recognize it in me.
yeah, it's the idea.
Yeah. I think for me, I was the first time I like really saw it in somebody was when I was with an ex-girlfriend at the time, and she was just like beating herself up because it was like she was supposed to send Christmas cards to like family and friends, and it was like way past Christmas. She was like beating herself up about being late about it, and she was beating herself up because like she didn't think her handwriting was like good enough. No. And it was like really hard to watch her just like really just like lay into herself in a way that like I would never talk to her like that. Like anybody who would speak to her like that would I would think be like really rude and inappropriate way of treating somebody, right? But she was like doing this to herself, and I was like, oh yeah. Like a light bulb went off on my head. I'm like, oh, I think I do that to myself sometimes.
Oh yeah, I think it's important to remember to cut yourself some slack sometimes.
Yeah,
but that's hard to do.
Yeah,
that's definitely hard to do.
Yeah. Hey, it's Editing Kai jumping in with a little sneak peek behind the scenes. There are a few gaps in audio on this particular episode because I use the Zoom recording feature. I'm on the freemium plan, and it only lets you record for 40 minutes or so before it forces the meeting to end. We do our best to navigate through this, and it's definitely my first time juggling the conversation and the recording running out. And, well, honestly, there's about 20 minutes of recording that is just lost because I forgot to hit record. So any aspiring podcasters listening to this, regardless if you're using Zoom or not, don't forget to hit record. During these 20 minutes, Yedz and I were talking about how she travels as a single female. She does a lot of rock climbing and winds up bumping into some familiar faces as they go to these well-known rock climbing sites. And here we discover my little mess up in 3, 2, 1.
Really?
Yeah.
Good job. Okay, I'll let you lead whatever you want to talk about.
You were just telling me about the story in Laos.
Yeah, my adventure in Laos. Great. So this comes from a question you asked me that if I ever ran into bad situations as a solo female traveler, right?
Yeah.
And so I was in Luang Prabang, which is a really cute town city in Laos, and I was on like a, what was it? Oh, it was the end of a 3-day slow boat trip. So you can take a slow boat on the Mekong River. And I had taken it from Thailand to Laos. So it ended in Luang Prabang. And I was exploring the city and I decided to rent a bike. And it was awesome because all of a sudden, you know, the world opens up to you. Like yeah. Before I was walking and your range is limited. It's like a video game, right? You upgrade to a bike and now you can explore more of the map.
Yeah.
So there's a temple on the hill in the distance. So I was like, I'm going to go check that out. So I went that way. And I think I arrived around like 4 p.m. or something. It was quieting down. I think things were closing. And the monks were coming, like the little kid monks were coming back from their schooling. So I arrived there and I was looking around. And then this young little monk who was probably like, I don't know, 13 to 15, like a teenage boy, right? He comes over to me and he says, do you want to see? I was like, what? See what? He's going to show me around, right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, sure. So he like took me to, you know, like through the complex and led me to where the, I guess like the dormitories are.
Yeah. So he was he like wearing... Like,
he was he was in the full monk gear, like the yellow and the orange mm-hmm. robe, and he had a book bag or like, you know, notebooks and stuff. So he was coming back from whatever school or location he was at. So he took me to the the area where the dormitories are, and then he opened his door and I was like, oh cool, this is where you live, that's really interesting, right? And then so he kind of motioned, he was really polite, he's like, yeah, feel free to go in. He didn't speak English, right? So
yeah.
he basically was like, go on, like motioning. I was like, okay, cool, yeah, I love to see, right? So I went inside and it was like a pretty humble place, or just a dorm with two beds either side. And then he comes in and closes the door, and he closes the door. I don't know if he locked it. I was like, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's a very small room, right? And then he comes over to me and he says, it's very nice to meet you. I was like, yeah, it's very nice to meet you too. And then he extended his hand to shake my hand. So I shook his hand and he pulled me in to kiss me. And I was like, whoa, no, that's okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
and then, you know, he didn't lock the door because I was like, oh, what else is around? And open the door, like, oh, look over here. And then went outside. But so in Laos, I believe most of the males enter monkhood for at least a little bit just to have that experience.
Oh.
I don't know too much about it. It's not like you have to be a monk, right? And this is your life. It's more like I'm going to become a monk for a week or like a month or a year or whatever.
Oh.
So yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's a teenage boy, right?
Yeah.
So he wanted to kiss a girl.
Yeah.
It's not that bad, but I thought it was pretty funny. But yeah, I probably shouldn't follow strangers into rooms where they can close the door.
I'm glad you learned that lesson.
Yeah, me too.
So the next time it happened, you turned them down?
I'll let you know if it happens again. Yeah, because I also remember reading that, you know, monks are not supposed to touch the opposite sex.
Yeah.
So like they're not supposed to shake your hand or, you know, like, or even take things from you. Like you're supposed to place it on the ground and then they'll take it. So I was like, oh, he's shaking my hand. Okay, well, I guess I have to do it. You know, I gotta be polite.
Yeah.
And then he pulled me in to kiss me. I was like, oh, nope, that's okay. Thank you. But it's safe to travel as a solo female.
Yeah, that's if that's the like one of the worst stories, like it sounds pretty
it's
safe.
Not that bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And also the thing is, you'll probably meet other girls traveling, right? Or even like other groups of people traveling, and then you're heading towards the same place, riding the same bus or on the same flight or whatever, you just can kind of follow them, share a taxi or share a bus ride or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're never, I found that when I travel alone, I'm never alone. So like I said, I met my boyfriend there. I mean, we didn't start dating then, right? We've been friends for a long time before we started dating, but I met people at the climbing camp and then met them in different places and just, you know, then you become a little group and a little family away from home. When I left Southeast Asia to go to New Zealand, I was alone and I really remember feeling kind of homesick for my Southeast Asia group, you know?
Yeah.
Because we literally spent almost every day together, climbing or exploring or whatever. And usually if one person doesn't want to do something, somebody else is free to, you know, go do this thing with you. So it's a really good experience.
This is a kind of a different topic. So I was born in America. I spent time in the East Coast in the last like 10 years. Actually, the time that I've known you, you've been in the Midwest in Minneapolis. And then you have experienced life in like California, I think in Los Angeles. You've done a lot of traveling and currently in Las Vegas.
Yes. Right? Yeah. You got it. It's hard to keep track, I know.
Yeah. How do you experience Asian American like community in these as you've traveled? Like both like just like moved and lit had like home base change and also like as you've traveled in other, to other places.
That's a really interesting question.
Because like also where like the Midwest is both like very white but also increasingly more and more diverse. I think when probably you were in high school here felt very different than like in the suburbs where versus like now a kid going to school in the suburbs, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. I found as I was growing up in Minnesota, I was born in China and grew up where I spent a lot of time in Minnesota from like 10 to 18. I felt like I didn't have that many Asian friends. Yeah. Until I got to college, then all the Asians came out.
Yeah. But you where were you in college?
I started in University of Minnesota for my computer engineering degree.
Oh yeah.
Which I didn't complete. I transferred into the art department. And then I went to animation school. So animation school for me is kind of like a graduate, you know, school. Anyway.
Where was Ringling? Is that what?
Florida. So I spent time in Florida. Yeah. I would say something I did notice is that when like my friends who I met at the U of M, who are still, you know, very close friends, I have a group of people that were on the same dorm level or like on the same floor.
Yeah.
Who are really close friends. Yeah, one's from Hong Kong, one's from Japan, one's in Singapore, right? And so my group of Asians.
Yeah.
But I think like for some of them, when they grew up or went to high school with a bigger Asian population, that I would say they have a heavier accent because their friends were Asian. You know, they never had to really like be friends with other people. So that's one interesting observation, I guess. Like when you I don't know where I'm going with that, but
was like a group of like Asian friends, was that something that you kind of like tried to seek out, or was that something that just kind of happened?
It just happened. I would say I've never felt excluded. Except for one time as an adult when I went to Colorado with a boyfriend who's also a Chinese ex-boyfriend, that we went to a restaurant and we were the only Asian people in the restaurant, like the whole restaurant. It's a big, pretty good sized restaurant. You know, that was the only time where I was like, maybe I don't want to live here. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to be, I guess I would want more variety and diversity. in wherever I settle. So, that's a loaded question because I think that reaction is related to growing up in Minnesota. Because I feel like as a young person, me and my family did get a lot of questions about being Chinese, like cultural differences, right? And
Yeah.
that's out of the goodness of people's hearts because they just don't understand or weren't exposed to a different culture. But so there's a lot of questions of like, here's a
Yeah.
dumpling, here's a spring roll, this is how you
Yeah.
eat it. And
Yeah. A lot of Minnesotans are not like, there aren't overtly racist Minnesotans, but in my experience as well, a lot of them are also just like well-meaning people who might not be like familiar with navigating somebody from a different culture. And so there is a little bit of like, like I don't really like necessarily love this conversation, but also like you're not coming at me with hostility, right? Yeah.
And I think people are genuinely interested, and a lot of questions come from lack of knowledge and
Yeah.
exposure, right? But as an adult, I've lived in California, which is a lot of diversity, and it was kind of refreshing. You don't have to have those conversations.
Yeah.
But as a young person, I remember enjoying those too. Like, hey, let me tell you about who I am, right? You don't know this thing about me or like my family, but here, this is how, I don't know. In China, we would do this, or like in
Yeah.
Chinese, it's like this.
Yeah. It would like
And it's
blow their
kind of
minds too sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of fun having that conversation. But as an adult, maybe because I'm more Americanized too, I spend more time in America, I don't necessarily want to be the one educating somebody else, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or it's like, oh, I got my own things to do. So I
Yeah.
don't know if that's a good thing or bad, right? But again, like as long as it comes from a good place, a place of curiosity and wanting more knowledge, then I'll never fault anybody for that.
Yeah.
I'll always take the time, because
Yeah. Where I grew like more frustrated with it was when it always felt like a lot of these conversations with white folks sometimes felt very extractive. Like I was always the one offering information. They were not explaining like the nuances of how Midwestern culture or American culture worked. And that always, after a point, that got unequally examined and examined, you know?
But here's another question. Did you ask them questions on the same level, right?
But I don't
Like,
want to, I don't have an interest
oh, I'm sorry. If you don't have interest, then how are they supposed to tell you? That's also on you to dig for
yeah.
information, right? Like,
But like I
what?
know how like McDonald's works and like American cafeterias work, you know? Like what information do you have that is like
Useful to you or
useful to
new to
me?
you.
Yeah, like I have to live in America. I have to live, understanding these things. Like you don't have to understand these things about me, but you get to just like extract this information from me and get nothing. And I get nothing in return except having to be like answer these questions and
My
put
time.
on, yeah, my time and put on smile and like, yeah, and like entertain your reactions, whether it's shock or disgust or like, disbelief. Like I have to navigate that with you.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I definitely feel that. But for the benefit of the doubt, like,
Yeah.
I don't, yeah,
Yeah.
that's tough. This point was brought up to me by somebody recently that, I don't know if this is kind of like a heavier topic. I don't know if
We
we
can be
want,
heavy.
okay.
I'm
So,
curious.
yeah. Ooh, how do I put this? So, it's actually my boyfriend who brought this up, but and he's white, right? And so he said something along the lines of, oh, I don't know that much about Chinese culture, but maybe it's easier for you to be in American culture because you and your family live in America, right? So you are more exposed to, I don't know, white culture or like American culture.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And yeah, I guess I'm curious what you think of that.
I should
premise that this was brought up because he was a little hesitant about, you know, like, oh, there's so much Chinese culture that I don't know, and I'm a little intimidated by entering that world, right? Like, if he's married into that world, is that something he wants for the future? Is, you know, like all that.
Yeah. It's I'm also dating somebody right now who is white.
Right.
And well, she hasn't asked like this exact question. Just like the fact that she is white is something that I've like, am deeply aware of and like think about it, you know, when we reach milestones in our relationships, especially mm-hmm. ones like related to like meeting my parents and things like that. I think it's like an interesting question because like China is huge. And so like recognizing being a part of the culture, being a part of the culture, like Chinese culture means wildly different things when you're sure, in China yeah. versus like a Chinese American living in America, right? My parents who are like grew up in China and immigrated to America, like China has evolved so much in the last like 30 years that they would not feel comfortable there. Like so many things would be totally unfamiliar and new to them, right?
Right. My parents too.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, China is like this massive region with tons of different, like not like subcultures, but like different, you know, ethnic groups and their own different like customs. And just like cuisine wise, there's so many different like foods, right? I guess my thought of like participating in Chinese culture is like for somebody marrying in, it's like, well, what are the customs of like this family, right? Mm-hmm. Because like, for example, Chinese New Year is like the biggest deal in China.
Right.
But for us in the diaspora living in America, it's like, well, what happens in China is you're supposed to, wherever you are, you go to your family, right, and spend right. time like Lunar New Year with them. For us, it's not practical to fly to China and spend time right. with our family there and then just come back. And so we have to find our own ways of celebrating. Like that family, I feel like each family has their own kind of way of celebrating or continuing. And I feel like some families reject or diminish their connection to Chinese culture too.
Sure. Okay, I have a question for you. So do you or does she think about how, let's say you get married or have a future or have kids in the future, do you guys think about, you know, the joining of your families? Like your family has a different background and culture and perspective than her family, right? Is that going to be an issue or is that something you don't even think about, you know?
Oh, no, I for sure thought about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel like embarrassed that, you know, here, oh, I'll introduce my parents to her family, or like, you know, there may be some cultural differences or I don't know. Is that an issue? What do you think?
Yeah. So she has met my parents actually, and mm-hmm. it was like the first idea of like the meeting was super stressful and like
for you or for her?
For me. She was game in the very beginning. She was game to meet my parents. I was so anxious about it and I like delayed it for like, well, I didn't delay, but I like didn't allow it to happen for months and months. And then with my relationship with my parents, like things were starting to go pretty well. And I felt like it like made sense for them to like meet her. And so I like started talking about having them meet. And I had somewhat unintentionally built it up in her head. So she was getting nervous.
Oh, no. Yeah. Eating off your energy.
Yeah. Yeah. And what ended up happening was that it was a really, really nice surprise that my parents liked her a lot. And yeah, like they've gone, when they've gone traveling themselves, or excuse me, when my parents have gone traveling, they've like gotten her gifts as well. My mom will sometimes like make food for her. And cute. Yeah, so it was a really positive experience having them just like take like her. And yeah, they were like friendlier than I expected they would be, because like my parents, they hang out with, you know, other Chinese people, so like I don't really see them hang, like for me, I guess it was a bit of a question mark of like how they would act around like a white person. Like I kind of knew, but you know, I see them, you know, sometimes interact with their neighbors and stuff, but like having to sit down and have dinner with, you know, somebody else, a white person, I was like not sure exactly how it would play out, you know.
Do you have to translate for your girlfriend at all?
I translate a little bit, but I think my parents also try to speak more Chinese, more English with her. Yeah.
Yeah. Because my follow-up question was going to be if she feels weird that, you know, she has to communicate through you.
Yeah.
But maybe that's more of a question with extended family, because your parents speak great English. So
yeah,
it's not an issue.
Yeah. I haven't thought about her meeting extended family. And I think she also has like the humility to recognize that she's kind of like stepping into another family unit. And I mean, just like with any other relationship or any other like interaction, you want to try to meet them, you know, where they are at, as much as you can. So I think that has been helpful in her like just navigating and interacting with my parents. And I think it helps a lot that my parents have gotten her gifts to help her just like feel like, oh, okay, like they do like me, you know. Yeah, like my parents were very sweet. They got her they know that she enjoys like Korean food, and at Costco they have like almost like ramen versions of tteokbokki, and they got her like a 6-pack of that, and she was just like really excited for it and really happy, and she's like, they like me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that made it a lot easier to just feel just like a little more confident, a little more comfortable, and just like not second guessing yourself with your interactions and everything. We can
continue.
Do you want to do it like a part 2 or part 3?
Yeah. No, this is getting to the good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be back.
Yeah.
Or I'll wait for your link.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, is that a good topic? Do you want to keep on going with that?
Yeah, sure, we can do that.
I'm pretty interested in, yeah, what you have to say there too.
Yeah. Yeah, so overall, I think things have been going well with at least the integration with my girlfriend and my parents. And I think it helps that both of them are thinking like, They're both individually motivated to have a good relationship with the other. And I think it helps a lot that, you know, Michaela has her, you know, act together enough in like broad strokes, and like, you know, she like,
she's putting,
has a job
put together.
That, yeah. She like has a job. She like dresses, you know, well, she, is respectful. Isn't like, you know, crude or crash or anything like that. So I think that made a positive impression. And I know that some immigrant parents are like not as well receiving or not as welcoming. And I think, yeah, like I think they're both groups are interested in like having a relationship with me. And as a result of that, they feel like they kind of have to have a relation, at least a cordial one with the other, right?
Right. Have you met her family?
I have met her family.
And yeah, how's that?
I joke around when people ask, or like when that topic comes up, I get the sense that, or like when I was, you know, meeting, you know, your partner's parents is always like a little bit, you know, nerve wracking. Cause you're like, mm-hmm. you know, you want them to like you and stuff. And I was pretty sure that like after the first time I met them, that like of her like family, I'm pretty sure that there were like three people's opinions that she cared about when it came to like me. Because you know, like if you make a horrible impression and your whole family's telling you to break up with them, like there's a good chance that you might be, you know, getting broken up with, right?
Right, right.
And I was looking at it from that perspective, and I thought there were three people whose opinion she really like valued, and it was her mother and the two dogs. I think their opinions.
The two dogs.
Yeah.
Fair. Okay.
I think those are like three opinions that really mattered. Like she would have listened to the other family members' opinions.
That's not what I was expecting. But I totally get it. I have a dog too. So
yeah. Yeah. Like if the dogs were like growling at me and they just like barking at me, like I think she would have been like, that's not a good sign.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, like she cares a lot about, you know, the rest of her family, but also like you don't get to choose your family. So I feel like they're how they work, go through the world and stuff is not necessarily how she goes through the world. And mm-hmm. so I didn't feel like I had to make like a positive impression on, like I still tried to, but like
right.
it like took the pressure off because like these people are bonus, right?
mm-hmm.
Before to finish my thought, her stepdad is a little like more conservative. And so mm-hmm. like these days being conservative, like there are a lot of, let's say, different ideas and impressions about different groups of people. And these mm-hmm. days, including, you know, Chinese folks like you and I are. So I am like a smidge nervous about, you know, when the day comes when our parents meet each other, you know.
Mm.
I'm not really sure what that looks like. And I guess like taking the pressure off, I think there's only going to be a few cases where they have to interact with each other. And otherwise, like we can visit them individually, you know?
Right, right, right. But yeah, I think that's an interesting topic for me. And that's something that my boyfriend has shown concern about. And I'm, you know, so we're in this tricky spot of, well, is this a big deal or not? Because I've never really thought about race like that. Like, maybe it's because we grew up in the US. Maybe, you know, it's because we are exposed to, we are the minority in America and we're used to that, right? So we are exposed to like white culture and various ethnic groups, and
yeah, we have to figure out how to fit in, how to, or at least just get along.
Right, right. And I never thought about like, oh, what do I want my kids to look like, right? Like they have to be Chinese, they have to be Asian, I want mixed kids, or I want white kids, or you know, ideas like that. I never thought about it like that. I've always approached it from finding the right partner first, right? Like growing a family, building a family. I feel like it's more important who you're doing that with. And I never really thought about like, I have to be with people of a specific background or ethnicity, right? It's kind of like whoever you find. And
yeah, you don't have to like answer this, or you can answer as much as you feel sure. comfortable with, but I feel like when I've heard about your past partners, like most of them have been Asian. Is that
So I have dated one white guy in college. And I think I have a preference. I can say I have a preference for Asian men. Not that, you know, like I'm exclusive to dating Asian men, because my current boyfriend is white, and it's kind of funny because I think for him, his preference is white women. But, you know, somehow we just started dating and it's been awesome until this point where, you know, now we're talking about, oh, okay, like if we take the next step, is this culture, is this biracialness, is an issue or not? And I can say that's not an issue for me, but he is undecided if it's a big deal or not. And, yeah, so I think like his concerns would be, you know, do our kids go to Chinese school in the future? Do you want kids to go to Chinese school in the future? And like, can our parents communicate with each other or have the same level of relationship that he maybe thought, you know, in-laws should have? Or, and it's really interesting, right? And so, and that's... I don't think, yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, to me, like an expectation that in-laws get along with each other is so interesting because, like, I feel like it's really unfair to the in-laws.
Now you guys have to be friends.
Yeah. because of a choice you made 30 plus years ago having this kid, now you've got to hang out with these families. Yeah,
that's funny. That's a good point. Like, dang it.
Yeah. I can imagine parents just be like, I told you we shouldn't have this kid. If we didn't have this kid, our Christmases would be just fine.
Right. And that's another question, right? Like, oh, your family doesn't really celebrate Christmas. Is that, yeah, is that a big deal? I always thought my kids would grow up with the same traditions that I did, or, you know, like, yeah. So it's, I guess I never really thought about it, but it is a interesting part of being a biracial relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal to me. You know, your kids, yeah, should be like a combination of both of you. So
yeah,
I would probably expect my kids to celebrate Chinese New Year. It's probably fun for them, right?
Yeah.
And then,
no, I mean, it's great when you're a kid. You get money.
Get money, eat all the foods, and dress up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would expect them to have Christmas if that's what the dad side of the family celebrated, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. How have your parents met other boyfriends of yours?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because this is the first girlfriend that I brought home to my parents.
Oh.
Meet. Yeah.
No.
So I had no like frame of reference for like how they were gonna take it or how they were gonna act.
No wonder you were so nervous.
I was terrified. For months I put it off.
No, my parents have met maybe all of my boyfriends.
Get the fuck out of here. Are you serious?
No, I'm serious. College, yeah. Ringling, yeah. Yeah, all my boyfriends. And, you know, annoyingly,
yeah,
I have
to
say, they were right about most of them. Like, they met a few where immediately they were just like, nope, this is that. You should just move on from this one. Where I'm like, what are you talking about? This is great. And then sure enough, eventually, you know, they were right about, you know, they would say things about, oh, this person's not going to take care of you, or this person doesn't have their life put together enough to, you know, like, or they seem really selfish. And in the moment, I'm like, what? You met them for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But ultimately, they were right.
Do you ever like tell your parents, like, yeah, you were right about so and so?
Yeah, I think I have.
What was that?
They're right sometimes. So I think, yeah, now I probably value friends and parents' opinion a lot more just because they have been right, you know, because when you're in the middle of it, you are wishing for the best, even if things aren't going well, and you're willing to, you know, drag it out or give it more chances. But then in the, you know, they really have the third person perspective where they're like just telling you as is, even though you may not want to hear stuff like that.
Yeah. It's like the way you interact with your partner in public is like a lot more revealing than I think people realize or recognize.
Oh, how well you are doing as a couple, you mean?
Yeah, I guess like how you act for in front of like a group of people when you're socializing, I think it's really revealing.
Revealing in what sense?
Revealing in like what kind of individuals you are and how that relationship is working or not working.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like people pick up on subtle stuff, right? Like
yeah, if you're, like for us in Chinese culture, like sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
In Chinese culture, like you know, you're supposed to serve yourself last. Other people you're supposed to serve first, right? And like it might not be necessarily something like Americans like states, but like if you're gonna be a good host, like you know, the host usually eats last, they eat the ugly pieces of whatever they cooked, right? Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Like these are kind of like maybe not as strongly like rooted in like culture, but like being a good host like implies these things, right? I think yeah, often these other tells too.
That's exactly why they formed their opinion on one of the exes.
Really? Like, what did they do?
We're at the restaurant and they already went in and sat down at the table. They didn't even wait outside for the rest of us to show up, you know?
Yeah.
Or yeah, subtle things, subtle eating thing mannerisms, like what you're saying, like, oh, they just poured tea for themselves.
Right. They didn't even ask if anybody else wanted tea.
Right.
Other thing. Like it's one thing if you look around and everybody's cup's full except yours, then it's like,
right.
Well, okay, obviously I'm just going to pour for myself, but you know, you should consider other people's.
Yeah. You know, I should say this person is Asian. So maybe that's where that expectation came from. Yeah. I don't think they would have that expectation from a Caucasian or
anybody else. But when you're like socializing and you can see like if the partner is considerate towards you or not, like
yeah,
oh, like do you want it, like I'm grabbing like an appetizer, do you want anything, like you know, these mm-hmm. are small things, but they also like if you're only grabbing food for yourself and you're never asking what your partner wants, like right. that's a sign too, right?
yeah no, that's true. That's a good observation. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, there was one time, it was at like a company holiday party, and there was a girl who had like started like a month or two ago. And, you know, for me, if I'm like starting a new job and I'm a month or two in, like a holiday party is a great way to just like have a chance to meet people and make a good impression and stuff. And she brought her boyfriend, and an hour into the party, like 45 minutes into the party, he like faked being sick. to get out, and I was like, and he like it was implied that he kind of made her leave too, and I was like,
oh
like I'm not gonna say anything, but this guy sounds like a prick.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
Or you know, at least to say I gotta go.
Yeah,
be honest, like, about
like,
it, right?
I'm not feeling well, like you can stay but I'm going to leave, you know.
Yeah
I think
relationships are tough though, you know, like nobody's perfect. No couples are perfect.
Yeah. So. Yeah, as long as it works for you and your partner.
Yeah. I hear about things that my friends bring up about their partner. You know, sometimes I'm like, what? I would not want to deal with that or like
yeah,
put up with that or, you know, but, you know, everyone's different. So.
Yeah. Yeah. My girlfriend's, one of her close friends, is a partner that just like consistently seems underwhelming to me.
You are not impressive.
You're not impressing
me. Be more impressive.
I mean, it's slightly biased because I'm hearing like third-hand information from my girlfriend. Because sure. You know how your partner tells you everything.
Oh, you're going to get her in trouble.
No. She's got lots of friends. It's fine. She's an extrovert. she has lots of friends. But you know, it's a problem when your partner are like always complaining about you.
Oh,
at least
yeah,
to their friends, true. You know?
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think something my boyfriend always said is that, or maybe he heard it from somewhere, is that problems come from couples not talking to them, to each other, but to their friends, you know, like not being straightforward or open with each other, but like talking about your problems to other people that you kind of compounds, or your assumption just kind of grows. And
You're not hearing your partner's words. You're hearing somebody else's impression of your partner based on what you've told them. Quite unfair to your partner. So when I visited Las Vegas in the past, like, I was surprised at how many Asian people were there and Filipino people were there. Thinking about just like I guess Chinese community, Chinese American community, and like Asian American community, how does it feel compared to like Minneapolis and like California?
To be honest, I haven't been really integrating into Vegas that much. My parents have made Chinese friends already. I don't know how.
In Las Vegas?
In Las Vegas. I think some people have homes.
WeChat is a powerful thing.
Yeah. And my mom is part of, my mom does photography, so she's part of photography groups. But I think they made some new friends who have homes in Minnesota and Vegas. So, you know, they connected and they do stuff together.
It seems like such a narrow demographic of people.
Hey, they found them.
Wow, good for them.
So I would say Vegas is kind of a funny place. It's conservative, but also liberal. It's somewhere in between. You know, I moved here basically because of two reasons. It's Red Rock over here is a mecca for rock climbing. And the prices are a lot cheaper at the moment. Or when I bought the house, it was one third the price of Los Angeles. So also it was the middle of the pandemic and everybody was remote. So I was thinking, well, LA doesn't really have much to offer for me at the moment, right? I want to be close to my activities. So I came here to Las Vegas, and it's definitely not California. You know, California has great benefits and has a lot of, progressive policies and benefits and diversity. I would say Vegas is a mix. Like, I mostly meet climbers here, and they're usually young and, you know, but during the election, there were Trump posters everywhere, like on the strip, right? I don't really know what kind of people are here. I would say it's a greater mix.
Yeah, I feel like for me being in the Midwest, in Minneapolis specifically, like, I really want there to be a stronger sense of like Asian American community. And like, it's something I feel is like sorely lacking and really like disappointing for me. And even just like, I don't know how to describe it, but like, just like quantity of like Chinese places to go to and hang out is like somewhat underwhelming. Yeah.
Vegas has a lot to offer. There's a lot of good restaurants and lots of ethnic food, but maybe, I don't know if it's on the same level as Los Angeles. I'm just used to living in, you know, Los Angeles, San Francisco, where it's mostly Chinatown. It can be, right? Like, there's a lot of high concentration of Asian community from different places. So there's a lot of variety of food and grocery stores here in Las Vegas. So that kind of stuff makes my parents happy. They feel like they have everything they need here. They got the grocery stores, they got the international airport, and mom loves traveling and the desert and like doing photography in national parks, you know. So Vegas is really central to parks like Zion, Bryce, and also it's only 5 hours drive to Los Angeles. So
yeah, I think my parents have also thought about retiring to
Las Vegas. They have friends here now.
It's probably your parents' influence, like part of is part of that influencing them. Yeah.
But it's, it does get hot. So
that's probably the biggest barrier for my mom.
Really hot and the sun is strong. So I don't know if your parents will be down for that.
They are both for different reasons not down with that.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad does not like being in the sun, and my mom does not handle heat very well.
What about you? Are you staying in Minnesota?
I describe myself as a reluctant Minnesotan. Yeah,
you would move if the opportunity came up?
See, no, I wouldn't, because these rent prices and like housing prices have got me all messed up. It's so affordable living in Minneapolis that like financially it like doesn't make sense to keep my salary and move to a different, more expensive city. And like, but those would mainly be the places that I would be like interested in living in. And then like, I understand applying for a job and like, you know, the cost of living, you know, your salary should also hopefully also like goes up correspondingly. But like, at that point, you're like quite far down the line and you've already like, I don't know. It's like a rush to like have the pieces come together. And it like,
what
do you mean? What? I'm not like you.
Just do it once. It's like a few months of, oh, finding a job. Oh, now I have a job. Oh, okay. Find a new apartment. That's it. You do it once and then you're like somewhere else.
our inner monologues are very different in this area.
I just really value quality of life, you know, like, I feel like you're happier, or at least I need to live in a place that offers me, or that I either offers me whatever, right? Like community or activities or nature, whatever it is that you're looking for. I think it's worth it. Again, it goes back to the going into animation thing. Like, if you pursue something you're really passionate about or something you love, then think you can make it work, right? So like, yeah. And but also I'm used to moving, so maybe that's the difference between the two of us. You know, it's like, oh, sure, it's a hassle.
There are lots of differences between us.
Yeah, to me that's not a big deal. It's like, oh, okay, just
no,
do
it's
it
a big deal to me.
just do it and then you're happy for the rest of your life. You don't have to deal
until
with
you
want to
move again.
Yeah, sure, okay.
We are wired differently in that sense.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I truthfully, I'm like aware of this. And also like one of the things I admire about you is like this like your willingness to do these kinds of things. I think, speaking kind of truthfully for myself, when I first graduated college, I was, so whereas you were like willing to follow your passion, I was like, had not really found my passion and like effectively like listened to my parents to take like the safer route and go to like business school and stuff. And so for a long time after I graduated college and was like in the real world and stuff, and not, you know, in the school environment, which I like could thrive in a work environment, that was a really difficult adjustment for me. And and for a long time I felt like I was just like not playing to my strength and not playing to my strengths, not really knowing what they were and not feeling really passionate about things. And there was a period of time when I first graduated, really, that lasted several years, where I was not able to, like, each employment that I had lasted less than a year. And so that was like, by like, you know, the first or second time it happens, doesn't really faze you too much. At the times it was devastating, but you figure out how to move past it. You like your inner dialogue, like, kind of pumps you up and stuff. But like by the fourth or fifth time it's happening, you're like, and this is like, you know, you're like 24, 25 now, and you like haven't had this happen for you. It doesn't feel like it's clicking. It was like really nerve-wracking, and I guess part of the thought process was also like, man, like I'm like struggling to tread water here. And like, I have, you know, friends and family, like, I don't know if I'm willing to just do this same thing in a different city, you know?
I see. Yeah. Like you have a safety net.
Yeah. Yeah. Here, at least, like worst case scenario, I go back to living with my parents. And I did do that for a long time. But it would have been more of a headache and hassle having to do that several states over, you know? So like I both like admire you and also feel like it was probably the right choice for myself. And I think just because it was the right choice for me at the time does not mean it has to be the right choice for me, like moving forward too, in perpetuity, you know?
Are you moving to Las Vegas?
No.
Are you going to California?
Let's go.
I'll meet you there. planting the seed.
Yeah, this is me willing to grow and not be stuck in past ways.
Yeah. No, I think that's probably a lot of people's situations, right? And that's understandable because I always felt really lucky that I felt very strongly about what I wanted to do or the career I wanted to pursue from a very early age. And that's not the case for most people, right? Most people, you have to grow, learn, experience, and maybe the career goal or the life goal changes and evolves as we go. But yeah, for me, pursuing art and animation, I guess I was lucky. And then so that just paved a very clear path.
Yeah.
And it's easier to pursue.
Yeah. I remember just like lamenting that, like, man, like I wish I was just happy being an accountant and like I didn't have to feel like I had to search for something and didn't have to just like want to explore other things. Like I so like desperately want to just be able to like go to my job, work, and then come home and just like do some like bullshit hobby or whatever.
I've thought about that too. I've definitely had times where I'm like, man, why am I so unhappy? I keep on wanting to go do this thing and that thing, you know, like when I'm in between job or like in between transitions, I guess. I would just look at some of our friends who are just happy working and like, man.
I'm so jealous. Like I'm still sometimes jealous. Yeah.
They want so little, you know? And but then I've always been really stubborn and very like, I want to see more, I want to do more, and I want to try it 100%, right?
So I've had that just like curiosity and wanting to explore and wanting to in a different way from you, but like wanting to hear about people. And I guess that's part of like the podcast is being able to hear from people and like explore what they're going through and also just like explore different things like in business or in writing or you know whatever it is. I feel like there's often pressure to turn these things into like a side hustle or like something monetizable, you know, or at least that's
what do
how
you
I
mean
feel.
Pressure we're gonna this episode's gonna go viral, right? I'm gonna become famous
if you want to.
Okay, yeah, that's my expectation.
Oh.
Start hustling.
Yeah.
Get those followers.
Yeah, and I guess for me, like not having at least in the beginning of my postgraduate career, not having like feeling like I had a solid career and also just like, you know, exploring and playing with these things, it was like both like really fun and rewarding because I was like doing what I like, caught my interest, what I found interesting, but also just like kind of stressful because it was like wanting to turn these into something sustainable for myself too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like Yeah, you're right. Often there's that pressure or expectation from society, right? But I bet most people are in your shoes. Like, I still don't know what I'm doing, right? I have a job that I like, I love, but what about the rest of life? I'm all still trying to navigate that and figuring it out. And I bet more people are in your shoes than not. Life is just complicated. Relationships are complicated.
I remember when I was like just about to graduate college, and my friend was having like a graduation party. She was a year above me, and she had some of her like family friends also in that graduation party. And I can't remember if I asked them or they just kind of brought it up. Like I was asking for like, what do you have, like, do you have advice for somebody who's like younger and graduating college? And this person was like so adamant that like nobody has it figured out, in that everybody's just kind of flying by the seat of their pants, and everybody's like very often doing this X thing for the first time in their lives. And they were very adamant that like nobody had it figured out completely,
I think that's true. And I think one of the tricks to life is probably just pursuing what makes you happy and makes you feel fulfilled. If you are fulfilled in the moment while pursuing that thing, then it's never a waste of time. And even if you don't have things figured out in the end, that was still a valuable experience. So do what you want.
I think in today's age, with the internet and having so many things accessible to us, like that is possible more than it's ever been in history. And earlier you had mentioned having a talent and finding your talent and being able to be in a place where that's like valued. And that will lead to just opportunities.
Yeah. And then even if you don't have an obvious talent, right? I feel like that's okay. That's okay. And then I think you just gotta be honest with yourself about how you want to spend your time and be okay spending time pursuing what you feel like is worthwhile and not worry about what other people are thinking. Right. I mean, obviously make enough money so that you can live and buy food and have shelter. But outside of that, nobody else is responsible for your happiness. If you keep on listening to what your family or society or whatever is expecting from you, then you'll never you you got nobody else to blame in the future if you feel lacking.
I think that's a good place to end this podcast. Thank you very
Okay.
much for being my guest and having this conversation with me, and and just your insight into things and sharing your experiences.
Yeah, great. It was really fun. Let's do it again.
Yeah, I'd love to do this again too.
Yeah,
Maybe in the future we'll be able to do it in person.
California, West Coast. Start looking for No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.